when you're talking about voter suppression, you talk about what it means for your employees who have other obligations. If you're talking about corruption in government, you talk about what it means for your industry.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, president of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care.
In this episode, Business Forward President Jim Doyle and Spitfire Strategies Director Annabelle Gardner hosted a media training on best practices when speaking to the media about the anti-corruption and voting rights provisions of the For the People Act. They also discussed how small businesses can help advocate for stronger voting reforms in their communities and the best practices for writing an op-ed or letter to the editor. We hope you enjoy the training.
Thank you all for joining us. I'm Jim Doyle with Business Forward. Today's training webinar will help you work with local media and speak with elected officials about HR 1, the For the People Act. This training reflects what we've learned from business leaders like you through dozens of recent briefings on voter registration and voting rights, campaign finance reform, government corruption, and rule of law. It also reflects years of experience helping local business leaders talk to reporters about other issues. If you're watching this, you'll be seeing slides from our training manual, which you can find on our website. The manual includes quotes on this issue from other business leaders, sample op-eds, and Q&A. For those listening to our podcast, I encourage you to download the manual, share it with your colleagues, friends, and neighbors. It provides a lot of extra information. It'll just give you more comfort when you're talking to reporters or elected officials. Today's briefing has three parts. First, we'll be offering a policy background on the For the People Act. Second, we'll be covering 8 rules for talking with the media. And third, we'll be sharing best practices for letters to the editor, op-eds, and speaking with elected officials. We're thrilled to have Annabelle Gardner of Spitfire Strategies with us today. She'll handle how to work with media in general, and I'll focus on the difference of speaking to the media as a business owner rather than as a concerned citizen. The For the People Act does 4 things. It promotes accountability in government by strengthening ethics rules and conflict of interest policies. It increases transparency in political spending by requiring more disclosure of political donations and ad spending. It enhances election security against cyber attacks, election hacking, and disinformation campaigns. And finally, it strengthens voting rights by creating a national standard for early voting, vote by mail, standardized hours of operation for polling places, and other policy. The For the People Act passed the House on March 3rd and will be considered in the US Senate this summer, perhaps as early as late this month. Now, some of you in this training may have heard about the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which is HR 4. Both HR 1, the For the People Act, and HR 4, the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, strengthen voting rights. But the For the People Act does more than that. It tackles dark money and corruption in government through ethics enforcement, transparency, and disclosure rules for political spending. It also provides for an enhanced election security measures. The two bills, HR 1 and HR 4, don't compete with one another. HR 4 is not an alternative to HR 1. The bills complement one another. Specifically, the For the People Act would create a uniform national standard for things like automatic voter registration, voting by mail, and early voting. It would take effect immediately, meaning it would apply to most of the 400 plus election laws proposed in state legislatures that make it more difficult for Americans to vote. The John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act would then enforce those standards moving forward by restoring the power of the original Voting Rights Act of 1965, which has been weakened by recent court rulings. It would also address any discriminatory policies that we haven't yet heard of by creating a new system for states and localities to have election rule changes pre-cleared by the Department of Justice. In sum, both HR 1 and HR 4 are necessary. Neither accomplishes the goals of the other. Today, we're focusing on HR 1, For the People's Act, anti-corruption, and voting rights provisions. We've been doing dozens of briefings on these issues, and business leaders tend to make one or more of 6 points that we'd like to share with you. These may speak to you, they may be consistent with your own experience, and if so, we encourage you to make these points when you're talking to reporters or with elected officials, and there are 6 of them. The first is what we hear a lot of is that small business leaders want money out of politics just like everybody else. In fact, more than anyone, Business leaders are sick of being hit up by candidates for campaign contributions. They're sick of the game. And they're also sick because they understand that large businesses that are able to contribute so much more than they can get a disproportionate benefit from their giving. So this notion of getting money out of politics is something that business leaders actually support. The second point that we hear a lot is that transparency is a powerful force in business, and we need more of that transparency in government. Business owners are responsible to their shareholders, to their customers, and to their employees, and we need that same kind of obligations in our elected officials. And the For the People Act provisions provide that kind of transparency and will make government more accountable. Number three, business leaders are quick to point out that if we allow corruption in how elections are held, it will spread to the rest of government. Gerrymandering, voter suppression are both ways to stay in office. And an official without fear of her next election is more likely to break the rules. Fourth concept we hear a lot of is when business leaders talk about the fact that we benefit as Americans from operating as the world's safe haven for business. We need to protect that. If we allow corruption in government, we're going to start looking like everyone else, and we won't benefit from that safe haven position that we currently enjoy. This could have a big impact on asset values in the United States. It could make it harder for us to open markets and to do business in general. A fifth theme that we hear quite a bit is business owners will talk about why we need to make it easier for their employees to vote because their employees have a lot of other things going on in their lives. Time and time again, business owners will talk about how their employees have long commutes or they have family obligations or a second job or night classes to go to, and they feel it's their obligation to help make it easier for them to vote. This isn't a problem of people being lazy. This is a problem of people who have a lot of responsibilities not having time to stand for hours in line to cast a ballot. And you as an employer can talk about the benefit to your employees of voter rights laws. Last, this is probably the most common argument we hear, and it's also perhaps the most effective one that we've heard. And that's that restrictive voting laws divide communities. And a divided community has a lot harder time attracting investment and creating new jobs. The idea here is pretty simple. States and cities compete with one another for new investment and new jobs. And the businesses that are considering where to make an investment look for a lot of things. They look for a talented workforce. They look for good highways, good schools. But they also care a lot about the strength of the community. And voter suppression divides communities and weakens communities, and no one wants to invest in a community that is growing weaker and more contentious. And once you start losing out on new investment and new jobs because of this problem, it makes it harder to catch up. There are a lot of people talking now about boycotting states that pass voter suppression laws. Frankly, our view from our briefings is boycotts don't work, and we don't encourage anyone to talk about them. What these voter suppression laws are doing is they're essentially hanging a "we don't want your business" sign on the border of that state, and it's having a big impact on new investment. So those are the concepts we tend to hear most at these briefings. And again, if you look at our training manual, you'll see further information about that. So we have 8 rules to follow if you're going to be talking to a reporter. And the first ones relate specifically to you as a business owner. And the next ones relate to just anyone talking with reporters in general. I'll cover the first 4 and then Annabelle will cover the rest. So the first rule is to remember to make the business case when you're talking about voting rights. You may be participating in this training because you approach voting rights and corruption as a concerned citizen. We encourage you to speak as a business owner. Why? Well, first, in our experience, when people write as a small business owner about what the economic impact of an issue might mean for their community, they're 6 times more likely to have their op-ed published than if they write as a concerned citizen. So right off the top of the bat, you're more likely to get covered if you're talking as a business owner. But the second thing is that passage of this bill is going to depend on reaching undecided voters in the middle. And most of those voters are not moved by moral imperative arguments that speak to you as a concerned citizen. They do care about how corruption and voter suppression will make it harder for your state to compete for new investment and new jobs. So we encourage you to make the business case when you speak. And this really takes 2 rules. First, it's The business case is about the arguments you make and how you make them. So we'd like you to focus on the economic impact of these laws, and we'd like you to use a data-driven, results-oriented approach that focuses on real-world experience of your business. So it's not just, you know, the focus you have, but it's how you speak about the issues. It's also important when you're talking to a reporter to understand your mission based on where the reform is in the process. So generally speaking, there are three missions that you can have when you're speaking to a reporter. The first is to raise awareness about a problem. The second is to push specific concepts during a legislative debate. And the third is to help close a deal, get people to support a tough vote, an imperfect bill. And here's what we mean by that. If you were talking to a reporter last year, it would be your job to raise awareness about the problem of voter suppression and government corruption. We're past that now. We're at a point now where legislation has been submitted to Congress, it's passed the House, and it's about to be presented to the Senate. So you're clearly in category two, pushing specific concepts during a legislative process. It's important for you to be as specific as you can about core elements of the bill: transparency, disclosure, security against cyber attacks, national standards for voting rights. It's important for you to be as specific as possible. Now, sometime this summer, we're going to get to a point where a compromise deal is on the table and people will be voting for an imperfect bill. And we urge you, if that's the case, and if an imperfect bill is better than no bill at all, your mission changes. And your mission is to help close the deal. It is to talk about the fact that as imperfect as the ultimate compromise might be, we need to support it. You need to give people who see this as a tough vote the cover they need. So rule number two, when you're talking to a reporter, understand your mission based on where you are in the process. Right now, you're starting with specific concepts during this legislative debate. In a couple months, you're going to be trying to close a deal and help people on a tough vote. Rule number three is you have to have a clear opinion. On the one hand, but on the other hand, conversations with a reporter, with an elected official tend not to go that well because they need to know where you stand. There are clear opinions that we keep hearing during our briefings, you know, such as if we allow corruption to how public officials get elected, we're inviting corruption everywhere else. Or if we suppress voters in our community will grow weaker and more divided, and that will make it harder for us to attract new investment and create new jobs. It's not your job to explain both sides of every argument to a reporter. It's your job to make sure your audience knows where you're coming from. Rule number four, wherever possible, speak for your employees, customers, suppliers, and competitors. Now, you're more effective when you provide specific examples of real impact on real people. That's how you make a strong impression with a reporter or elected officials. When you're talking about voter suppression, you talk about what it means for your employees who have other obligations. If you're talking about corruption in government, you talk about what it means for your industry, how startups that might try to disrupt a sector are being disadvantaged by corruption because corruption tends to protect special interest, established interests. Wherever possible, really try to tie the issue to your business, your sector, your employees. Now, there's a second rule here that we also think it's important for you to understand. When you speak, you can speak in one of two ways. You can speak on behalf of your business. So if you own a construction company, let's say ABC Construction, you can say something like, at ABC Construction, we deal with government for permits over regulations and as a contractor. The only thing worse than bureaucracy is corrupt bureaucracy. We can't afford to let big special interests buy even more control. That's you speaking specifically on behalf of your business. Now, you may not feel comfortable talking about ABC Construction in your quote. An alternative is to say, I've been in the construction business for 20 years. I deal with government for permits over regulations and as a contractor. The only thing worse than bureaucracy is corrupt bureaucracy. We can't afford to let big special interests buy even more control. Now, you've identified yourself as a contractor, you've established yourself as an expert in the field, but you're not listing your business specifically. The real question is, what do you feel comfortable with? Are you authorized to speak on behalf of your company? What we encourage you to do is, before you talk to a reporter, make sure you know whether you're speaking on behalf of ABC Construction or whether you're talking to someone who's been in the construction business for 20 years. Decide first and be prepared when you start the interview. And I'll turn this over to Annabelle.
Hi, folks. So excited to be here. My name is Annabelle Gardner. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a director at Spitfire Strategies, which is a strategic communications firm that works specifically with individuals and organizations to help you share your voice about issues that you care about. And I'm really excited to be supporting y'all around voting rights, which is something that we have been working with Common Cause and others about for a long time. So it's really important when you're talking to the media that you keep it short. You know, if you're talking to a radio reporter, you get two questions and 20 seconds. If you're taping an interview at your office, the coverage will include about 5 minutes of a 30-minute interview. And so you really have to practice to give concise, compelling answers to the questions you're asked. And the more concise you are, the more likely you are to get the quote that you're hoping for. We also encourage folks to think about what three key points that you want to share before the interview. So Jim just talked through a number of different ways that you can be talking about For the People Act. And we really want you to focus on sort of what are your three key messages and just continue to hammer those home throughout the interview. You want to make sure that you're sharing those points early and often, and don't stray away from those main points. It's really helpful to use local comparisons and simple examples to help you make your point quickly. And remember, people have to hear things multiple times before it really sinks in. And so once you're sick of hearing that message, once you're sick of saying the same thing over and over again, that's probably when it's actually just starting to sink in for the people that you're talking with. So just make sure that you're staying on message. Another rule is to reframe questions about what we call hot button issues. So the whole point about speaking on an issue as a small business leader is to give a different perspective than what people might already be hearing about voting rights or about For the People Act. So you really don't want to get pulled into the political rancor or the hot button issues related to voting. You're there to focus on the business case, what voting means for business, jobs, and economic growth. For example, as a business leader, you can support For the People Act by explaining what it would mean for the communities that you live and work in, or maybe that your employees live and work in. But a reporter might ask you about the political feasibility of the bill, whether or not it can pass, or whether various, you know, politicians support it. And you want to make sure that you're actually pivoting away from those kinds of questions to focus on what you're really there to talk about. So for example, you could respond, I can't really speak to the political process, but I do know that voters should pick their leaders and not the other way around. And I think the majority of small business leaders agree with me. We want a fair, accessible democracy because America's economy depends on it. So that's just an example of how to make sure you're reframing back to your main message. We'll also talk about how to pivot and bridge away from questions that might take you off message a little bit later on. But remember, and if you walk away with this with one main thing, this is it. Your goal is to share your key points. And so stay focused and don't let the reporters take you off message. So lastly, it's important to remember that you're always on the record. We have a couple different lingo that we use when we work with reporters that are important to know. But in general, you want to remember that anything you share with a reporter can be shared, and it's important to keep an eye out for that. So one term that we focus on is on the record, which means that a reporter can quote you directly by name and title. And as Jim said, you want to think about whether they're quoting you or you're talking to them based as the head of a business or as a representative of your business or as someone who just has experience in a particular field. And then the other term is off the record, which honestly can mean different things to different people. And so it's important to actually ask reporters when you're talking with them what they mean when they say off the record. But usually it means that you're providing background on an issue and a reporter can't quote you by name or title. However, it's important to remember that if a reporter can confirm what you shared with another source, they can report on it. So again, reporters are human beings. Human beings make mistakes, and you should always assume that whatever you to say to a reporter is fair game, which means you always want to come prepared because you can't really take back something on the record after the fact. All right, and our last rule we're going to talk through before sharing some best practices is knowing how to pick your battles and to let Business Forward and Spitfire be here to support you. So one small business leader acting alone is really unlikely to make an impact. However, a cacophony of business leaders talking about an issue can be really, really powerful. And Jim and Business Forward have a lot of great examples about how that is. And that's really the benefit of working with Business Forward and other business leaders on this issue, is that you can coordinate and have an even bigger impact than you can have on your own. So Business Forward can help you take action on this issue and specifically help you do it at the moment when it's going to have the biggest impact, like right now. So For the People Act is, you know, in front of Congress, and the midterms are not that far away. And if we don't make progress on voting rights right now, it'll have really serious consequences for our democracy for years to come. So let us know if you're interested in getting involved, and we can follow up with you about timely opportunities to make your voices heard. So now we're going to talk through some best practices for actually engaging the media and others to make your voices heard around For the People Act, and a couple different ways to do that. So the first one is through op-eds and letters to the editor. So letters to the editor are a really unique opportunity because the letter section of a newspaper is often one of the most widely read sections. And so most papers will print short letters. And so you want to make sure that you're keeping your content to fewer than 200 words. And letters are more likely to be printed if they are responding to an event or a story that ran in that paper. So you want to make sure that you're keeping an eye out for news stories on topics that are relevant to voting, voting rights, and to respond regularly through letters to the editor. For instance, every story about state anti-voter bills is an opportunity to talk about how For the People Act will make voting options more accessible across all states, give us an equal voice by preventing billionaires from buying elections, and help elected officials who govern in our interests by drawing congressional districts to give fair representation for all. So you don't have to be complaining about coverage to get printed. You can use letters to the editor to actually reinforce a good story and get its message into the paper one more time. And again, to emphasize the business case for protecting the freedom to vote. Op-eds are another opportunity. Op-ed stands for opposite of the editorial page. And it is usually a piece written by someone who is not on the news staff or a journalist, and is typically in response to a news event or a policy introduction. You know, landing an op-ed in a large national outlet like the Washington Post or The Hill can be difficult and time-consuming unless you have a big name author to pen it or to really provide like a uniquely poignant perspective. And so generally, we encourage folks to pitch op-eds to your state or local outlets instead, because they will be easier to place and it will actually probably reach audiences that the large national outlet may not. So those are just some things to keep in mind. Just like the LTE, an op-ed has to be timely, and you really have to make sure that you have a unique and strong perspective to share. Before you start writing, we recommend that you review recent opinion pieces published in your local or state outlet about voting or maybe anti-voter bills, and consider how your voice, especially as a business leader, could add a new perspective to the conversation or maybe reimagine the conversation altogether. You can usually go to the website of the outlet to learn more about the different requirements they have for op-eds, like word count. But I would say that usually a solid op-ed is between 500 and 850 words. So another opportunity to make your voice heard around the For the People Act is to actually talk to your elected officials. So go directly to the decision makers who have the power to pass this bill. Regular communication with your elected officials, especially in coordination with other business leaders, can be more powerful than you can think. And it really helps to build trust to have that regular communication. We encourage folks to focus on your elected official, so the folks who represent where you live, where you work, or where your employees may live or work. In Congress, elected officials are likely to ignore you if you are talking to someone that you're not a constituent of, because they want to sort of defer to your representative, but also because they can't use office funds to talk to folks outside of their districts. So it's really important to look up who your representatives are and to contact those folks. And there's a couple of different ways to do that. So one is through letters or emails. And of course, you know, snail mail takes a little bit longer. And so you want to make sure that you're thinking about timing, but they can be really impactful. And so you want to make sure, just like in your interviews, that you're keeping your letter short, you're keeping it to your main focus on the business case and your unique perspective. And it's important to identify yourself as a constituent of that representative and as a business leader in that first paragraph, so they know where you're coming from. Another opportunity is through calls. So there's always opportunities for us to help you come up with a script to call your legislators about the For the People Act. They do keep track of every call that they receive, so it can be very impactful. But you also want to make sure that you're identifying yourself quickly as a constituent, as a business leader, that you want to stay on your key messages, and then actually ask for the name and email of the staffer who is in charge of your issue so that you can send them a follow-up email as well. And then lastly, and maybe one of the best ways to connect with your elected officials, is through a meeting. And so you can ask for the legislative staffer either on the website or by calling to request a meeting. And if you're dealing with a member of Congress, we recommend that you request a meeting with your representative when they're at home in the district, so that you can have that sort of more local connection. And if appropriate, you can also always invite your representative to visit your place of business to get even more of a feel of why this issue is so important to you. Okay, so of course, media interviews are another way to make your voice heard and to add a business perspective to the conversation about voting rights. And so once you have decided that you're going to take an interview, and of course, Business Forward can support you if you decide to do this and make sure that the interview is worth your time and that you're prepared. These are four steps to answer any question. And so the first one is to listen. So that might sound a little obvious, but it is really important to listen to the question that you're being asked, because that way you can make sure that you're being as responsive as possible to the question you're being asked, but also it can help you catch any loaded questions or hidden assumptions in the question that you don't really want to play along with in your response. Next step is that you want to pause. So that really means to take a moment to collect your thoughts. You can use, you know, you can repeat back the question if that feels more comfortable, but this is really an opportunity for you to sort of remain calm, count to five in your head. And it really gives you time to think about what you want to say. So I just took a brief pause. It didn't feel awkward. You probably maybe didn't even notice it. And what's really important to remember is they can't quote a pause. Right? It's better to pause and collect your thoughts and then to start with a complete sentence that gets to your main point, like we discussed before, than to just jump right in and go with the first thing that comes to your head. It also helps you avoid filler words. So this is one of the best advice I ever got when I was prepping for trainings or presentations or for interviews, is to actually use pausing as a way to avoid a filler word. So if you hear yourself or think yourself about to use a filler word, take a breath, and then it can help you avoid things like, right? All right, so then the next step is to actually respond to the question. And it's important to note that we very specifically say respond and not answer. Because again, the whole point is you're there to share your perspective because you have a mission. You want to talk about For the People Act and how voting rights are important to you as a business leader. And so every question that you get asked, no matter the question, is an opportunity for you to come back to that main message. And so it's really not about answering the question you're being asked, but responding in a way that highlights what you're there to talk about. So there's three kinds of questions that we usually encourage people to prep for when they're getting ready for an interview. And the first is a softball. So those are really the ones that should be super easy to hit out of the park. And with practice, you should be able to get them down pat. These are things like, tell me about your business, or what role does business need to play in public policy? Why is it that you support expanding the freedom to vote to all Americans? So these are really the ones you want to practice, you want to get down pat, and they are sort of softballs to get you to share your main messages. Another type of question you want to prepare for are hardballs. And these are the questions that may try to take you off of your main message. And these are the ones that you really want to prepare for ahead of time so that you can know how you want to pivot or bridge back to your main point. So here are some examples that we've heard advocates get asked in the past is, you know, should Delta have come out stronger against restrictive voting laws in Georgia? You don't live in Georgia, this might not be something that you're, you know, able to comment on, or maybe it's not in your area of expertise. And so these are good opportunities to actually pivot or bridge back to what you are there to talk about. And what we usually encourage people to do is before you get on the interview to actually take a quick look at headlines in your area or national headlines about voting, because that's usually where reporters will pull those hardballs from. So it can really be helpful to take a quick look, do some brainstorming, think about what hardballs you might get asked, and then, you know, jot down some responses for how you would pivot back to your main message. Lastly, there's curveballs. And these are the kinds of questions that really come out of left field and they're not connected to what you're talking about. It could be that the reporter is distracted or they're trying to get a soundbite maybe for a different story they're working on, but they have you in front of them, so they're gonna ask you about it. And this is really one of those opportunities to pivot back to your main message and to not take the bait. So here are just a couple of examples, you know, like, what do you think about vaccine passports? And that's really not what you're here to talk about. So good moment to pivot back to what you are here to talk about, which is voting rights. So after you respond, the last step is to stop talking. And that might sound a little weird, but you really want to share your main message, take a beat, and actually stop talking. So sometimes when we get nervous, some of us get like motor mouth where we just keep talking. And those are the moments where you're going to go off message, where you might say something you wish you didn't say, or it might just mean that the coverage isn't as compelling or actionable as you hope that it was. And so it's really important after you say your main message, take a beat, pause, and wait for the next question. It's also really important to know that reporters are actually taught to use silence as a tool to continue the conversation. And so you don't want to fall into that trap. So remember, if you pause, you wait, they don't say anything, they're kind of stretching it out, you can always say, do you have another question? As a flag for them to keep going. So those are the four steps to answer any question. And then I'm just going to share a couple more best practices as you're prepping and doing interviews with reporters. So again, I've said this a million times, I'm going to say it a million times more. It's so important to stay on message. And these are some of the tools that you can use to do that. So the first one is bridging or pivoting, which I've mentioned a couple times. And I really just want to emphasize that this is your best friend as far as staying on message. And it can help you sort of pivot back no matter what question you're asked to what your main message are. And these are some helpful phrases that you can use. So, you know, let me put that in perspective, or what's really important to remember is, or, you know, that's not really my area of expertise, but what I'd like you to know about voting rights is X. So those are helpful phrases. Another tool that you can use is called flagging. And this is a tool that helps reporters know when you're about to talk about something that's really important. And it not only helps you remind yourself about your major points or main points, but it also means that if you have a 30-minute interview and a reporter is quickly going back to do some edits and pull out the pieces that they're going to use for their coverage, they're really good flags for reporters like, hey, I'm about to say something important. So it's more likely that those will be the quotes that'll get picked up when you use this as a tool. So some of the like flagging phrases are, you know, the most important thing you need to know is X. Here's what I really want to make clear. The critical point here is that voting is good for America's economy, you know? So those are some tools that you want to make sure you're incorporating into your interviews. And again, you know, Spitfire and Business Forward are here to help you prepare, help you feel good about it, and to make a really big impact as a business leader in your community. All right, and I'm going to pass it back to Liz.
Wonderful. Thank you, Annabelle and Jim, so much. That's all the time we have for today. And for those of you who would like to do more, Business Forward and Spitfire can help connect you with a reporter in your local media market and support you as you write an op-ed or an LTE. So please reach out to us at info@businessfwd.org. Again, thank you to everyone who joined today's training. Thank you, Jim and Annabelle, and I look forward to working with you all again soon.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Littman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.